The Miami Heat pull it off. The second 8th seed to make the NBA Finals. They defeat the Boston Celtics, who had themselves a rough shooting night. We will coronate the Miami Heat. We will look forward to the Finals versus the Denver Nuggets. We will say goodbye to the Boston Celtics in pretty pitiful fashion. And hey, the Sixers got a coach. We got lots to talk about here on Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily source for all things NBA from the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thanks for joining us and making us your first listen. We appreciate you guys being with us. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network and co-host of Locked On Nuggets. And I'm going to be talking to this man quite a bit over the next few days. His name's David Ramil. He's co-host of Locked On Heat. You can find him on Twitter at DRamil13. As the Miami Heat have clinched the Eastern Conference Championship, they are headed to the NBA Finals for the second time in 4 years. On today's show, we'll talk about the Heat's win over the Boston Celtics. We will, I'm going to be real honest with you, we're going to bury the Celtics, who dug all the way out of an 0-3 hole, only to lose at home in embarrassing fashion and got booed on in the last game of the season. Woof. We'll talk about how great the Heat have been in terms of overcoming the odds. We'll look forward to their matchup versus the Denver Nuggets. We'll do that in segment two, as well as later on in the show, we'll talk about the Philadelphia 76ers, who have themselves a new coach. We'll let you know that today's show is brought to you by the Game Time app. If you're looking for tickets to absolutely anything, download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code LOCKEDONNBA for $20 off your first purchase. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed at the Game Time app. David, your Miami Heat, which you can catch all the coverage of over at Locked On Heat. Win game 7, 103-84. Jimmy Butler is your Eastern Conference Finals MVP. And what was a controversial vote, as many felt, that Caleb Martin, who, by the way, had 26 tonight, 26-10 for Caleb Martin as the torrid shooting continues. 11 of 16 from the field, 4 of 6 from 3. The Boston Celtics hit 9 three-pointers in total, 9 of 42 at 21%. I'll start here. What impressed you about the Heat's performance in this game? And how much did it impress you relative to how disappointing, from an objective analysis, Boston's performance was?
Well, that they were able to come back with the kind of focus that you wouldn't expect a team that lost game 6 in such demoralizing fashion at home. I was at Kaseya Center for game 6, watching as Jimmy Butler willed that team back to life after a fourth quarter deficit to hit those 3 free throws, to watch that Marcus Smart shot clank off the rim only for it to fall right to Derek White, and just the air sucked out of the room for as electric a crowd as I've ever seen at the home arena there. And to hear the players talk about it afterwards, they were buoyed by it. They felt, you know what, it's okay. It's just another game. We put it behind us. And you hear all that, and that's kind of cliched. And at the same time, it's the right response. And yet, I don't know how much stock you can put into it as you're watching Jimmy Butler say confidently yet again, oh, we're going to win it in game 7. Well, you said you were going to win games 4, 5, and 6, and you didn't quite work out that way. And then Jimmy clearly limited. I don't think there's any debating that. And yet for him to be as focused as he was, for Caleb Martin to have the incredible performance tonight and throughout the series, for them to just never defer to all the talk about Boston being more talented or Boston having this and the home court advantage for the Celtics and the fact that they're an 8th seed and the undrafted players and everything else. And they just continue to believe in themselves in a way that very few teams do. And with just enough grit or tenacity or whatever cliched emotion you want to attach to it, to will themselves to victory after victory. The fact that they're here, and I know they took advantage of a Giannis injury in the first series, and they were scrapping against the New York Knicks, who were a very good team, and then they challenged the Celtics, and they lost those 3 games. And here they are in the NBA Finals, despite everything else. That's what my biggest takeaway is just for them to be able to withstand the last 3 games, the Derek White layup and everything else that comes over the course of the postseason, the regular season, and for them to be able to show up and dominate quite frankly. And a lot of that due to the Celtics screwing up and ruining themselves at every opportunity. But you have to give credit to Miami for taking advantage of those opportunities, because I think a lesser team would just watch Celtics, watch Boston, you know, shoot themselves out of the game and say, oh, well, you know, we still have a chance, and maybe not take advantage of those same chances. But they certainly did, whether it was a Caleb Martin jumper or Jimmy baseline drive or whatever it took. They got it done. Big performances from Caleb, Kyle Lowry, Duncan Robinson, Haywood Highsmith coming in there and providing a nice spark defensively. Just an incredible victory for the Heat.
Yeah, a really incredible performance. Honestly, the MVP, I think, of this series should have been probably Eric Spoelstra. His ability, his timing of when to deploy zone, the decision to move away from Kevin Love, the decision to start Caleb Martin, the way they've empowered Caleb Martin, all of the tactical moves that Spo made were the correct ones. You know, I think a lot of teams, most players will say that they get over blowouts easier than they do close losses.
Yeah.
Those haunt you. But I think, and like, this is a little bit of like retroactive post ergo Proctor Hawk stuff, but I will just say, like, having covered the Heat through a bunch of finals runs back in the LeBron era, and then like been to a couple of through the years, there is, I think, a dynamic here where, particularly with Jimmy at the lead, yeah, and with the way that Spo approaches every game in terms of how that team sets the tone for themselves,
yeah,
that game six for them was not, man, we almost came back and pulled off a huge upset. It's we're better than them, and they had to sneak out a 0.1 buzzer beater to beat us to come back from 3-0. We know we can win in Boston. We've already done it twice. So like, a lot of that, I think, is kind of built into the mindset there of how they were able to recover from that game six. And then, to be quite honest, like when you talk about the toughness factor, both teams really struggled offensively in this game. Like, this was a low scoring game, like all game sevens are. But Miami kept to their functions. Like, they were still disciplined, and they got better in terms of keeping to those things quarter by quarter, set by set, and kept to it. They didn't deviate from who they are. The Celtics didn't either. But the difference here is that the Heat weren't as desperate. Like, by the third quarter of this game, the Celtics are just chucking. Like, they are just like, Jaylen Brown took some god awful three pointers.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not an anti threes guy. Like, I understand the argument of, if they're not hitting, you need to be able to adapt. I understand that. It's kind of tough when that's been your formula for literally the last 7 months of basketball. It's kind of hard to just be like, let's switch it up. Let's go to the post now. Can't do that. Right. But like, you could get more aggressive. And it, obviously, I do want to say, like, Tatum, we'll get to the Celtics in the final segment, but like, I want to credit Tatum for taking ownership. Like, Tatum after the game was like, no, like, no one needs to feel sorry for me. Yeah, the ankle hurt. It's my job to power through it. That's how this goes. Like, the Celtics took responsibility for the collapse. No throwing people under the bus, like some people do when they lose playoff series. So like, credit to them for that. But I will just say, like, they got away from their process, and the coaching matchup kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger as the series went on. Even as the Celtics came back, like, people were like, well, you know, they won. Like, is Joe Mazzulla a genius now? And it's like, no, like, the Celtics should never have gone down 3-0 to this team. But they did, because that's their identity. And this was like the big key. And I got to put this way on Twitter. When there are teams that you can mess around with and still have a margin of error, if you mess around versus the Miami Heat, you're going home.
Well said. The fact that Miami's largest lead of the game came in the fourth quarter when Boston was still trying, and Miami ballooned their lead up to 23. Wow. And that's what finally did the Celtics in, is like, they're not giving up. And that's just who the Heat are and have been since Jimmy joined the team. That's been the hallmark of this team for the past four seasons, and they continue to get better. I thought they'd be tired. I thought Jimmy's injury would show up. Bam was struggling offensively, defensively, and in every other way. He was making a huge impact, and as a playmaker on offense, pulling down rebounds and things of that sort. But his scoring was off and has been for much of the series. It's pretty impressive. And I've covered the team, and I know that they use a lot of what we perceive to be as cliched as possible, you know, next man up mentality and everything else. But the fact that Spoelstra continues to imbue that team with the confidence to recognize when it's their moment, they have an opportunity to shine and to not shy away from those opportunities is as impressive as you get. So I'm glad you shout out Spoelstra. It's good that he gets the respect that I think he deserves and has deserved for a long time. And I think some people still, you know, overlook the fact that he's been able to win consistently, whether it's with just Dwayne Wade for the first 2 years, the Big Three era. Since then, obviously now with Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. But by every stretch, you look at this team, they were an eighth seed. They were mediocre over the course of the regular season. They shot badly, and then all of a sudden they shot unstoppably well in the Eastern Conference Finals and through most of the playoffs. And that's, I think a lot of that is just Eric Spoelstra's continued faith and his smart coaching decisions, you know, the right timing there, understanding, okay, we need this kind of boost, put this guy back in, not fearing about playing somebody for too long or for too little. Like Jimmy Butler sat out for stretches there where I thought he was going to play all 48 minutes, and it wasn't necessary for him to do so. And you know, Kevin Love had started 3 games in a series. He didn't play the last two. Haywood Highsmith didn't play last game. He wound up playing today and having a spark. Cody Zeller, et cetera. And Caleb Martin, I mean, what a success story this is for him to shine in these moments. And I will be 100%. I thought last year he was the best value contract in the NBA. He's always had the potential to do something memorable, but it's tying all together in ways that we did not even see over the course of the regular season. He was good during the regular season, but again, he was waffled in and out of that starting lineup. He has been a very, very good player progressively and getting better over the course of the postseason, and he's playing at an all-time high. So just, I think a lot of credit goes to this roster and Eric Spoelstra for helping define that identity and sticking to it despite whatever challenges they face.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if Wade's going to be okay with Caleb Martin's stature being much bigger. That was my other question for you. Yeah. On the other side, we'll get into first thoughts on the Nuggets versus the Miami Heat in the NBA Finals starting on Thursday. We'll touch on our first thoughts on the series, how it looks, if Miami can continue its streak of upsets. We'll do that when we return on Locked On NBA. But first, I need to tell you about the Game Time app. If you're looking for concert tickets, if you're looking for comedy tickets, if you're looking for sports tickets, you want to catch a baseball game, and you're let's say you're downtown in whatever city that you're in, and you're just like, I want to go catch a game. I wonder, you can go on Game Time and get tickets for that day's games at a great price. Their flash ticket deals are the absolute best in the industry. Forget planning months in advance. Game Time has the best deals on tickets right up to the day of the event. Get exclusive flash deals on tickets for football, basketball, baseball, concerts, comedy, theater, and more. The Game Time guarantee means you'll always get the best price. If you find tickets in the same section and row for less, well, Game Time will credit you 110% of the difference. Snag the tickets without the stress with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code LOCKEDONNBA for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code LOCKEDONNBA for $20 off. Download Game Time today. Last minute tickets, lowest price guaranteed. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA. Thanks for joining us and making us part of your day. Appreciate you guys joining us. You can catch this show either on Apple Podcasts, 5-star reviews, please, Spotify, or you can check us out for a video version on YouTube. Best way for you to support the show is check out Locked On NBA on YouTube. So, David, I imagine you and I will have to get together for a crossover episode here in the next couple of days because The Denver Nuggets are going to be facing the Miami Heat in the NBA Finals. The one seed Denver Nuggets, the third top two seed that Miami will have faced in the postseason, will take on the 8-seed Miami Heat. Nuggets, obviously a huge favorite at the sports books. That's not a surprise. Like, hard to not have that be the case. I'm curious as to your first thoughts on the matchup. I've given mine a little bit on Twitter, but I'm curious as to how you feel about the matchup specifically with the Nuggets relative to these other series.
Some concern there, I think, just because Bam can make an impact in so many ways, particularly defensively. And I don't see that happening in this series just because he struggled so much against Nikola Jokic. I think the numbers bear that out historically. I know that you've talked about it at some point. I can't recall exactly when that was, but yes, he has struggled against the Joker. And I don't see any reason why that would change. As good as Bam is, I mean, Nikola is just one of one. And so the size differential clearly in Denver's favor. And I think the key to stopping Denver, or at least trying to find a way to eke out the victory, is to stop Jamal Murray and to limit him as much as they can. And having said all that, like, Miami has just continued to find a way to win. And I know that's overly simplistic, and I've got nothing else, Matt. And I know we talked about this team all season long, and I was as optimistic as you possibly could be, and yet had no idea what the ceiling for this team or group could be, because you heard rumblings that there was tension in that locker room. That hasn't been a problem the way it has for Milwaukee, New York, or Boston. And Miami just finding themselves at just the right time. And they continue just to eke out these victories. So on paper, it seems like Denver has a clear matchup, but that hasn't mattered for against Miami all postseason. And I don't see why it would this time. So it's going to be a very fun series. That's as simple as it can get for me. I think it's going to be a lot of interesting matchups, and I think it's going to be a lot closer than people expect it to, just because Miami just doesn't know when to die. They'll just find a way to keep coming back, even against as good a team as Denver has been and as good a player as Nikola Jokic is.
Yeah, a lot of storylines, as the NBA finals often produce. You know, there's all the jokes about like how this was the nightmare scenario, but like a lot of interesting storylines here.
I love it. Not just on Miami perspective, just like, I mean, I love this Denver group. Like, I mean, having covered Aaron Gordon in Orlando from the wasteland of basketball in Central Florida and now in the NBA finals, and he's become such an integral part to what they do there. Like, that's such a great story. I had a chance to talk to him last time Denver was in town, and he's just like, so overjoyed to finally be playing for something that matters. That was never the case. They had one playoff run in his tenure in Orlando.
We've got the bad blood from the Marquise Chris situation, which is one of the funniest things I've ever seen for a player.
Don't let Andy Ellisberg out there.
Hadn't been like on the team very long, and Heat fans were like, you can't do that to our guy. And I was like, this guy's gonna be on your roster for like 6 months. Like, I get it was a vicious hit. I understand. That'll be fun as a storyline. Spo has had such a massive advantage in the playoffs in terms of like the coaching advantage.
A lot less.
And like, he has the advantage here. I'm not gonna sit here and say that like Michael Malone's as good of a coach as Eric Spoelstra. That would be ridiculous. Spo's got two titles, but I think it's less of a matchup advantage than others. I think Malone's probably a little underrated in the public discourse in terms of how he manages these adjustments.
Yeah,
I think home court's a really big deal here. Denver's been just unbeatable at home. And like, look, if Miami goes into game one and steals it, that flips the series in a big way. You kind of nailed it in terms of the on paper, which is like, I can't look at this tactically and be like, I think the Heat can steal this. They're going to win. I can't do that. But right. I'm not going to sit here and be like, no. Like, the Nuggets are going to win. Smash them. This is over. There's no chance. Why would I possibly say that? Like, why would I possibly say that? I've just watched them beat the Bucks, the number one team in the Eastern Conference, who I had some questions about all year, and then beat the Boston Celtics, who I legitimately was like, yeah, that team's going to win the East. Like, there's no, like, maybe not the title, but that team is the best team in the league, and they're going to make the finals, especially with Milwaukee out. And Miami didn't just beat them. Like, let's be real clear here. Like, it went seven, but they had a 3-0 lead, and a lead with 0.1 seconds left in game six. Like, this could have been a six game series for Miami. So you're absolutely right. That's, and you know, a lot of this is also the 2009 Magic actually profile a little bit like this. And what I mean by that is, like, if you go back and look at some of the advanced metrics, the Magic weren't necessarily impressive. They had a better record and some of the and better numbers than Miami, but the difference was like, basically, the Magic were the first team in an era where that did not have three-point shooting, but they just got hot. Like, they shot a lot of threes and they got red hot, and that got them past both Cleveland and Boston in those to make the finals. And so, like, it really is just like, look, if Duncan Robinson's going to continue to shoot 45% from three, and if Max Strus is going to hit threes, if Gabe Vincent's going to continue to shoot better than 40% from three, if these guys are going to put up 50-45 splits, guess what? It doesn't matter. You know, Denver, and because like there's also a cumulative effect here, and Boston, I think, ran into this too, of like, if you're taking the ball out of your own basket because they're draining threes, it just drags your offense down. Miami's transition defense is excellent. They have a really good transition defense. They do not let you get back. That's a big advantage for Denver. They're the best transition offense in the league, and they have killed teams in the playoffs with their transition offense. The Lakers had a nightmare of a time versus the Nuggets transition offense. And so, like, if Miami takes that away, like, what you're basically trying to do here is take, like, the baseline floor of Denver, which is higher, because I should note that, like, the worst defensive rating that the Heat have allowed in a win is below the Nuggets' average offensive rating in the playoffs. Like, if you could drag that offense, though, if you can just drag it down a little bit, and then it's like, all right, get some shot variance, and that brings you up a little bit. You're just trying to do the same thing you did to Boston, which is just, like, narrow the margin for error. And right. Once you get it into a range where it's shot variance, maybe Miami pulls it off. So, like, I'm not going to say, like, tactically, yeah, no, it's going to be a nightmare. It's going to be a nightmare. The Nuggets are fresh and have KCP, Bruce Brown, and Aaron Gordon to throw at Jimmy and Caleb. Right. Like, that's tough. Bam has had a nightmarish time with Nikola Jokic. The numbers the last three seasons via NBA.com's very, very wonky, admittedly wonky matchup data. Per 42 minutes of matchup time versus Bam, Nikola Jokic has averaged, I'm not kidding, per 42 minutes, if you just match them up for 42 minutes, you put, like, you take their rates by the minutes averaged, and then you, like, extrapolate that.
Right.
It's 50 points and 25 assists per 42. Now, he's not gonna do anything close to that, right? But it does show that it does show you that, like, Miami's gonna have to, like, there is kind of the idea of, like, well, Spoelstra will, quote, figure something out. If you listen to Spo's comments on Jokic, he will not be like, yeah, we'll figure something out. He'll be like, no, he's going to kill us. We're just going to have to figure out a way to make it work.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, because one of the things that Miami has said, and Spoelstra in particular has said, is, you know, as long as you drag these games into the mud, that's where we find a way to thrive. And it just kind of keeps things even for most of the game, knowing that Jimmy Butler usually finds a way to step up, especially in the fourth quarter. I don't know how likely that is, given, again, that Denver is a really strong matchup and that Jimmy does seem to be somewhat limited. I don't know how much better he'll get. There's also questions about, where is Miami going to continue to get scoring from? We're seeing a report before we're recording this that Tyler Hero might come back with a target of game three. He's likely to come off the bench, but he's also probably going to give up a ton of points. His conditioning has been fine, but he's just starting on court work. He shot around before Boston's game today, and he looked good. Hey, look good. But that's, you know, it's one thing to look good in a pregame shoot around. It's yet another to be in the NBA Finals in Denver and having to find a way to come back. So I can see why they're holding him out to game three when they're back at home. And maybe he feels the pulse of the crowd and gets it going offensively a little bit, but he can be targeted defensively. So there's not a lot of great options, but yet Miami's depth. And again, finding ways for random player to step up. I Duncan Robinson didn't play for long stretches over the course of the regular season, and he's been vital to Miami's success. And he's been very good. They got a block on Jason Tatum. His off-ball movement has been phenomenal. His passing, even his defense. As long as the refs don't call those ticky-tack fouls as often as they did during the regular season, Duncan is a plus player out there. So I could see him having a pretty decent series against Denver as well. And there are a lot of interesting matchups there. And it's hard to, like, pinpoint anything that swings in one team's favor over the other, except when it boils down to it, you've got an unstoppable player in Nikola Jokic. Yes. So, the other thing is, I was going to ask you, you know, Boston always had a high rate of implosibility. You know, that's definitely not a word, but you've seen them crap the bed very often over the course of the regular season. They play with their food a little bit too much. And that certainly happened in this series and in game seven. That's not something that Denver does, right? They don't just squander games as often as Boston does.
So they did that in the regular season, for right. sure, right. which is one of the things that I thought was, like, going to be true of them coming into the playoffs. I was like, this is still going to be a team that messes around. And I will say that they have proven me wrong on that. That they went – game four in Minnesota was a loss, and that one's actually very illustrative of who they are, which is, like, you're up 3-0. The series is effectively over. You've dominated this – first round opponent. Right. They went to overtime in that game four. Like, they lost in overtime, right? They come back home and they smash them in game five. They lose two straight versus Phoenix, and all the momentum is with the Suns. They smash them in game five. They go on the road and they destroy them in game six. you've got the Lakers with a 15-point halftime lead in game four. Very easy to be like, all right.
Just get it back to game five. Yeah,
we'll take care of it at home.
Right.
They come out and they rattle off a run. And they – so, yeah, I have to give the Nuggets credit that they have not – that doesn't mean that they – like, past performance doesn't always equate to future performance. Past results don't always equate to future performance. But Denver has proven they are at least less likely to do that than Boston was. When Boston – well, that's a good transition. On the other side, we'll talk about what exactly the Boston did in this postseason and how they came up short, as well as we'll talk about the 76ers' new coach for Joel Embiid to blame. We'll talk about that on the other side when we return on Locked On NBA. NBA, thanks for joining us on a Tuesday. I appreciate David staying up with me. It is now 12:45 Eastern. He's still out here cranking out the content. Make sure to check out, if you want coverage of the Eastern Conference champion Miami Heat, go check out Locked On Heat. We'll be doing a crossover episode sometime here in the next few days. I want to get a foursome with you and me and Wes and David and Adam and just do the whole thing together. It's on Fridays. It's actually Thursdays, actually, is Adam Mares and Fridays is a show for Adam Mares and Wes Goldberg together. It's funny that we actually wound up together in these finals. So let's talk about Boston because I think it's important. Like NBA discourse, I wanted to talk about the winners first. Like you got to credit the Heat.
Yep.
Got to talk about Boston. So I don't like it when teams immediately when or at least when the coverage immediately shifts to like their offseason decisions, like the Jaylen Brown max extension. I think there's time to talk about that, but I think it's more important to like, you need to like document in the moment, how did this end for a team? And especially for a team in Boston's situation, they were the number one seed with an absolutely ludicrous jump shooting performance that I said was unsustainable back in December through most of the season. The Bucks overtake them with a 16 game winning streak in February. They never regain it. They finished as the two seed. The Bucks get knocked out in the first round. Everyone goes like, oh my God, this is a cakewalk for the Boston Celtics.
Right.
And we should have seen this coming with Boston. And honestly, like I will say I made a lot of, I bet Sixers plus 2.5 wins, Heat plus 2.5 wins. I made a decent chunk of change on those. The point here is more, you could recognize from that first series, that Hawks series should have gone five. You get one. You get to give them one. Fine. You want to screw around? Fine. One. But that went six. Right. And that was the first time that I was like, uh-oh, that's right. More than you should give them. And then I was like, well, they'll probably screw around twice versus the Sixers. And they screwed around three times and almost, they were down 3-2.
Yep.
And so we kept kind of going like, well, now they're going to right themselves. Well, now they're going to get, and even we did it again after game six, where it's like, okay, you know what? It was dicey there for a while, but they're going to be the first team to do it. And then in this game, the biggest, I think, problem for them is that the team that they've been for a couple of years is a team that would defend first, switchability, high effort, Marcus Smart making plays, tough defense on the perimeter, don't allow ball, you know, penetration because of your switching, and you contain everything and contest the threes, even if your rim protection's a little shaky, but you got Robert Williams to clean it up.
Right.
This season, they were literally just a did we make threes team. And when they didn't make threes, their defense fell apart. And to me, that was the illustration that we saw in game seven, was that when they did not hit threes, there was nothing else they could do.
Right. No, that's well said. I kept expecting, well, they're going to figure it out. They're going to do something. They're going to stop putting up those random long threes that had no chance of falling. And even when they had wide open drives to the hoop, they were just like, nope, let's go for the uncontested jumper and hope it falls. And I can understand you're down. You want to be able to close the gap. But the gap was narrowed to, what is it, 12 points in the third quarter where Derek White went on a mini run. But he was the only player. We made this point in Locked On Heat. He was the only Celtics player that seemed totally unfazed at the moment. And even he struggled over the course of the whole 48 minutes. But Tatum was off. Brown was – he had a few moments in the first quarter. And then after that, he was an absolute no-show, coughing up the ball. He just looked lost, putting up that long shot for no reason. Grant Williams was a non-factor after finally being inserted into the lineup. Robert Williams and Al Horford were non-factors in offense. Marcus Smart shot himself out of the game. Like, it was just not a good series. And you look at that roster, and you know, Malcolm Brogdon was hurt, and I know he was a big part of where they had so much regular season success, sixth man of the year, et cetera. And yet they still seem as complete a roster as you can have, and yet one that's also got a number of holes. And I don't know it's necessarily holes in terms of talent. I mean, certainly you want an offensive shot creator and somebody who can make plays as a point guard, perhaps. Although I think Marcus Smart's playmaking was fine in this series overall. It's just they're missing something. And I don't know where that intangible factor comes from. And again, I hate boiling it down to something like that. But the fact that they do implode as often as they do, and that they just focus on, well, we can't hit these shots, we just don't have a chance. There needs to be some kind of, I don't know, some through line of tenacity or integrity or sticking to their identity that this team just lacks. And I'm not sure if that's from the coaching side of it or from the player side or a combination of both. Because on the Miami side, it seems like there's this incredible synergy between Spo and Jimmy, where one mirrors the other in that regard. On the Boston side, it does mirror each other, but in a very negative way. So I don't know. I don't know where they're going to get that infusion of something from. And maybe this is the one win to wake them up. But you thought, after having been eliminated by the same Heat in the bubble a couple seasons ago, and then they go to the finals and winning two games against the Golden State Warriors, maybe they'd figure it out because they'd want to have a chance to repeat and go to the finals yet again. That was not the case. So it's tough to see what's next for this group.
Yeah, I think Brown was terrible in this game. A lot of it for me is that in the playoffs, you have to have certain mechanisms that you can go to as your bread and butter. That you're like, we're going to create offense out of this. And for Denver, it's the Jamal Murray, Nikola Jokic two-man game. You know, and there's a million different ways they can run that. DHO. Mm-hmm. Post up to a DHO. Pick and roll. Pick and roll to a post up. Pick and roll to floater. All these types of different ways. Like, they can run 100 different ways and get 100 different shots out of it. But that base concept of those two together is reliable offense when things get tricky. When you're like, we need to be able to just like survive the stretch here. Mm-hmm. Boston doesn't have that. They run a I appreciate the fact that the Celtics are different in that it gets boring. Like, everyone's talking about this, about how like everything in the NBA is high pick and roll. Everything in the NBA is high pick and roll. But one of the reasons that it's that way is because it sustainably gets you offensive creation. It creates penetration for kickouts. It creates pressure at the rim with your big man. It generates the things that you need to compromise on offense. And the Celtics so often do not do that. And they just wind up being perimeter side-to-side movement, resulting in a three-pointer, sometimes contested, sometimes open. They had a lot of success early, and I will say, like, I thought their process early was good in this game. The Heat were switching everything, and Horford was slipping to the basket, and they were kicking it to Horford, who was then jumping into the corners. And they make those corner threes, and that's good offense, and all of a sudden they're cooking. The shots didn't fall. And it's just really hard when those shots don't fall to keep going with it. If Horford's able to, as a more dynamic big man, to finish at the rim, if he's younger, you know, if Horford's 6 years younger, then that dynamic is different. Like, a lot of it, this for me is about Robert Williams.
Yeah.
His limitations as a player, which is like, you can't use him as a weapon. He's just like a putback guy or a finisher.
You know, it seemed like their offense was best, though, when they did get that slip and were able to get Williams at the rim, because he had that size and athleticism advantage over even Bam. And it looked like that were the best plays that they were able to run, was when it would wind up with a Williams dunk or a layup. And then they just kind of went away from that. Or Miami took it away from them on occasion, but there wasn't really much they could do. Sometimes they would just give it up, and knowing, oh, you know what, he's going to get that finish. There's nothing we can do. You'd get a Gabe Vincent on a switch or something like that. You know, he's not going to stop Robert Williams at the rim. Or those kickouts from Horford when he had that same opportunity there. And just aside from that, the ball movement is not great. I think even in the wins, they wind up not having more assists than Miami in a number of those games. Just simply too much ISO action. You're hoping for Tatum and Brown to continue to hit those shots. And other than that, that seems like the bulk of your offense. And that's not sustainable if those shots aren't falling, you know, and they can't go to anything else. And that's where Miami's versatility, because they haven't relied on their shooting all season long have found different ways of creating opportunity. And yeah, it's manifesting in ways that were unexpected. You know, again, Duncan Robinson being this great point guard all of a sudden in the Eastern Conference Finals was not a development I expected, but that was just part of it. You know, Caleb Martin was getting a lot of open looks. And that's another thing, too, is that, you know, Boston just wasn't I don't know if they just simply didn't figure it out, or I mean, Caleb was getting a lot of looks, but they also weren't pressuring him the same way they were pressuring Jimmy. I guess they were daring him to beat him. And he's like, okay, bet I'll take care of that. And he did. So it's just, they go away from their strengths much yeah. more often than a good team should.
And that wasn't the case last year. And like, I think that the Ime Udoka situation was unavoidable. Like in terms of I don't know what they could do there. Like it was, by all accounts, wasn't a great situation. And they those decisions had to be made. And it happened so close to the season that with the inability to replace him with anybody on stat, like Mazzulla was the guy,
right?
You know? And so like, that's just how it wound up working out. Like Will Hardy leaves and how does the season go if Will Hardy hadn't left for the Utah Jazz job? That's a good hypothetical to question. Not to say that like this entire loss is on Joe Mazzulla, because the players were out there and like Jaylen Brown had 8 turnovers and like cut his hand on the base and dealt with that all postseason. But just like, this is the second playoffs in a row where we've just seen him not be able to dribble. And like, if you're going to be an all NBA max contract, $250 million player, you're going to have to be able to dribble and create stuff. And it was really bad because, again, like, here's a good example of it. Tatum clearly hurt on that first play. I gotta hate charges. Clearly hurt on that first play. Clearly limited throughout the game. And like, again, he's not asking for to be let off the hook.
Sympathy, yeah.
Yeah. But I'll just say, like, he still finished with more points than shots, 14-13. Right. It's a terrible night for Jason Tatum, but like given everything, also 11 boards, 4 assists, like Tatum was still out there working. Jaylen Brown took 23 shots in this game, 19 points on 23 shots, 5 assists to 8 turnovers in the minus 17. Second worst on the team behind Grant Williams. So Boston fans are going to maintain, can't break up the core, can't break him up. Just stick with it. 24 and 26 years old. You stick with it. Don't break him up. They're too good. Got to keep them together. I don't know how much Jaylen Brown wants to be there. And that's going to be the question that I think they're going to have to dive into. But boy, are we looking at a really interesting situation in the Eastern Conference with the Bucks and all the decisions on their plate, the Sixers and what's going on with them, with reports that James Harden's gone, and now the Celtics with trying to reckon with what happened in a playoff run that should have been much easier than it was on themselves. Speaking of the Philadelphia 76ers. They officially hired Nick Nurse, as Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN first reports that Nick Nurse becomes the new head coach of the Philadelphia 76ers. Nurse, obviously, several years in Toronto, including a championship season in 2019, replacing Dwayne Casey, known for primarily two things: defensive ingenuity and playing as starters a ton. So it's going to be interesting to see how that balances. Now, somebody did bring this up, and I thought it was a really good point, David, that they're like, yeah, he plays the starters a ton when they're younger, but when Kawhi Leonard came, they rest managed him about as well as you could possibly imagine, and that's part of what led to the title. So maybe this is like, maybe he helps with that. The defensive ingenuity is going to be really interesting because he was able to do a lot with the personnel he had in Miami. When you got Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby and Norman Powell and a prime Kyle Lowry, you can do a lot. We don't know what the Sixers are going to look like next year, and there's not as much that Joel Embiid can do in terms of like the different types of defense that they can run. So I'll be curious to see that. Plus, to be quite honest, Nurse's a half-court offense lacked a lot of oomph the last two seasons after Kyle Lowry and Kawhi Leonard left. So ups and downs with the hire, but this is a win-now move to try and get Joel Embiid, I think, back into the fold. Hey, we got you a championship coach that's dialed in, that it's better in the X's and O's. We got you this guy to try, I think, get him bought back into the Sixers, regardless of what happens with James Harden.
A little surprise, right? Did you think this was the right fit? I didn't see. I thought Nurse to Phoenix probably made more sense. And I think so much of whatever success we might assume he can find in Philadelphia has to do with the return of James Harden and whether or not that winds up being consummated there. I don't... I can't expect that they would have hired him without the buy-in from Embiid and Harden. And yet, again, I think Harden's status is somewhat up in the air, right? Do you think that he can maximize these two older players to get them to be different slash even better than they were over the course of the postseason? Because they both had moments there, a lot health-related and age-related in Harden's case, but do you think he can get them to be a much more effective group, or is it more about maximizing those players on the fringes like Maxey, Tobias Harris, et cetera?
I think Nurse will at least – here's the biggest thing that Nurse gives you is he's a problem solver. So a little bit like Spo. Spo's a much better coach because I think Spo's the best in the NBA. But one of the things about both of those coaches is that they're not – tied systemically. So right. Doc Rivers is going to be like, you trust what got you here and we do this and this is who we are. And he focuses on like team identity and small things. Nurse is more likely to be like, look, yeah, that got us here, but we're not facing all the teams that got us here. We're facing this team. So let's do what we can do the best we can to beat this team. And that flexibility is one of the reasons why they've been a really good regular season team is their ability to basically counter whatever it is that they face. When they face the Nuggets, let's go small and let's run as hard as possible and beat them on the offensive glass, even with smaller guys, because we're just going to like out hustle them, which like that's a very good counter and something the Heat should pay attention to.
Yes.
If you're facing the Boston Celtics, we're going to switch everything and we're going to take away their ability to just move the ball side to side. And we're going to focus on contesting all these shots. The versatility is what I'm kind of getting at. Like, that's what I think Nurse brings. Now Nurse has got an ego. Got a big ego. Embiid's taking some shots at him in the past. I don't think it's going to be a problem. I actually think that they'll kind of connect with each other based off of both being a little bit, not egomaniacal, big ego, big presence, big confidence guys. I think that Embiid will respect, I hate to use this term, but like the alpha mentality of like Nick Nurse. I actually think that they can get it done.
Yeah.
All right. It's going to do it for Locked On NBA. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate David staying up with me. You can catch him on Locked On Heat all throughout the week before the NBA finals begin on Thursday. Okay. I will not be with you next week. David will have a guest as I will be on the road traveling to Miami to see David for games 3 and 4 of the finals in Miami. So hope you guys have a great week. Enjoy it. Back tomorrow, John Corrales. Oh boy, that'll be something with John Corrales of Locked On Celtics along with Jake Madison of Locked On Pelicans tomorrow. Make sure to check that out. We'll see you guys again next time. Thanks for joining us on Locked On NBA.